From Altoona to Erie, Sealands Grove to Somerset, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, it is known as the Bonus Depreciation Act. Sounds a bit arcane, but it means more family-sustaining jobs for Pennsylvanians. State Representative Frank Ryan is here to explain. Prevailing wage. It costs taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars each year in inflated public works costs. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report. And U.S. Senator Robert P. Casey Jr. has announced his opposition to Supreme Court Justice nominee Brett Kavanaugh. On this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary, Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania says Casey should give more consideration to the judge's credentials. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to State Representative Frank Ryan in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. The process of establishing online casino-style gaming in Pennsylvania is now underway. Nine casino owners have applied to the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board for licenses to operate online gambling. Pennsylvania joins Nevada, New Jersey, and Delaware in legalizing online gaming. Each of the nine casinos anteed up $10 million for licenses. Others can still get in the game, but the cost goes up to $12 million. In a related development, casino operators are complaining that the Pennsylvania Lottery's new iLottery gaming system mimics slots games. They view that as a violation of state law. The disagreement looks like it's headed for the courts. A federal judge has ruled that the mineral rights of a company that wants to conduct fracking in the Delaware River Basin cannot be superseded by regulations put into place by the Delaware River Basin Commission. The commission has sought to regulate fracking in the basin, but the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled they cannot enforce a moratorium that would have prevented the Wayne Land and Mineral Group, LLC, from fracking. At least one company is reaffirming its commitment to Pennsylvania. Air Products, which is based in Lehigh County, announced this past week the company will build a new corporate headquarters in Macungie Township. That's near Allentown. Some 2,000 employees work at the company's corporate headquarters. Company officials say the new headquarters complex will take advantage of improvements in technology to reduce its physical footprint and operating costs. Read about all things Pennsylvania on the all-new patownhall.com. Pennsylvania has a reputation as being one of the least business-friendly states in the country. That got worse last winter when the Wolf administration attempted to undo one of the key benefits of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. But a bipartisan vote of the legislature restored something called bonus depreciation. To explain what that is and why it matters to all Pennsylvanians, we are joined now by State Representative Frank Ryan. He represents the 101st Legislative District in Lebanon County. Frank, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Frank, among the successes of the recent legislative session was something that is commonly known as bonus depreciation. Now, most people's eyes are going to glaze over and say, well, what the heck is that? And so let's go step by step through what this is and why it matters to folks. First of all, tell us what the problem was that needed to be addressed.
Bonus depreciation is not that kind of thing that you write home to your mom about and explain what it was all about, but this thing is really important. What triggered the problem was this, was Revenue Bulletin 2017-02 that the Department of Revenue put into effect on December 23rd, 2017. And what it did on one fell swoop is it basically said, because of the new tax law enacted at the federal level, this is President Trump's tax bill, that any assets acquired and used in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania would not be able to benefit from any of those benefits that were put into place by the federal law. But they went one step further. They said not only that, but any asset that you bought, you couldn't depreciate at all. So it made Pennsylvania, in the stroke of a pen, the most disadvantageous place on earth, and I mean on earth, to have a business located. Now, let me give you an example, because many people hear the word depreciation, and it just really doesn't mean a lot to them. And I understand that, because I'm a CPA, and I do spend a lot of time explaining these kinds of things. But here's what it would be like. Let's say you bought an automobile and it cost you $25,000. And when you buy the automobile, virtually everyone who owns an automobile knows that the second you drive it off the lot, it's worth less. Well, Pennsylvania, on December 23rd, 2017, the governor said, well, no, it's still worth the same amount until you actually sell the vehicle. So I like to tell people I had one of my vehicles for almost 14 years, I believe it was the total number, had about 474,000 miles on it. And it would have said, according to the Department of Revenue in Pennsylvania, that that vehicle had the same value the day I bought it as on the day that I got rid of it, had 472,000 miles. Well, we all know that's not true. And what would happen is, when I went to trade in the vehicle, when I did trade mine in, I got $500 for it. And in Pennsylvania, under this bill, it means that you might have an asset or a business for 25 years and not be able to deduct it at all until you sell it. Well, you may never sell the asset. So as a result, businesses were leaving the Commonwealth. Companies that were located here already were deciding whether or not they were going to expand here or not. And it became a major issue. So I was the prime sponsor of a bill, House Bill 2017, to put that into effect. It made it through the House of Representatives with a vote of 183-4. I was very proud of that. The governor spoke against it and asked that we not approve it. The minority leader did the same. Well, the bill went over to the Senate, sat there, kind of languished. And then after a while, it was decided that a senator was going to run the bill. So they adopted the identical language of mine. It's called a companion bill. And they ran that bill. And that's the bill that actually became law. So it was my language, my bill, and it's now Act 72 that puts Pennsylvania in compliance with virtually every other state in the Commonwealth, and we're back in the business of being able to compete with our other states and candidly nationwide and worldwide.
As a business owner, what is the impact then of this? Why is it important that I be able to take a depreciation on equipment when I buy it rather than when I sell it or over an extended period of time?
The reason it's so important is that when you devalue an asset after you start putting it in play, you need to recoup that cash. It's called proper matching of revenue and expense, and it's an accounting convention. So let's say if you buy a piece of machinery and it costs you $100,000 and it lasts for 5 years, what it allows you to do in essence, and I'm simplifying it a little bit, but in essence allows you to depreciate or to write off $20,000 per year so that the approximate value at the end of the 5 years is zero. When you pay an employee, say if you pay that employee $25 an hour, the minute you pay him, you can deduct it on your taxes and you get a tax deduction for that payment. Depreciation is the exact same thing. When you put it on your tax return, you get a tax benefit immediately for that expense.
We are talking with State Representative Frank Ryan. He represents the 101st Legislative District, that in Lebanon County, Pennsylvania. We're talking about bonus depreciation. Now, Frank, all of this sounds good if I happen to be a business owner, run a factory or a manufacturing firm. But if I'm Joe Lunchbucket up there, why should I care?
This bill was much more important for workers than it was for business owners. Because what business owners were saying is, if we didn't fix this, we're not going to locate our business in Pennsylvania. And I mean this sincerely. With that revenue bulletin 2017-02, Pennsylvania became the most uncompetitive location in the world because of what that had happened. And we were seeing business. We know of two businesses in particular that were going to locate what I call mortgage-paying jobs in Pennsylvania, and they canceled their plans because it took 8 months to get this thing done. And get it signed and signed into law. So something that the governor could have rescinded strictly by just revoking Revenue Bulletin 2017-02, he let it sit there for an entire 8 month period until it got, or 7 month period until he got it done. So for the average worker, what this means is that your companies are going to expand here. Otherwise, I would tell you, if this did not get reversed, I would tell virtually everybody to start looking to other states for a place to live, because Pennsylvania will cease to exist as a viable place to get a good mortgage-paying job if that revenue bulletin was not reversed.
So the General Assembly actually set aside partisan differences and took a step to creating more and better job opportunities for Pennsylvania. So kudos to everybody of both parties for doing that. Another piece of legislation that went through on time this year for the first time in 4 years was the state budget. It did pass by large numbers. However, Frank, you voted against it. What was the problem with this budget that you saw that caused you to vote against it?
I've spent my entire life keeping companies out of bankruptcy. And I've told people that I won't vote for a budget until I know that the fiscal and financial discipline is in place to make sure that we have a long-term sustainable growth potential in the Commonwealth. So there were a couple of issues in particular that really concerned me tremendously. First of all, the reason the budget balanced so easily this year is because the governor borrowed $1.5 billion out of the tobacco trust funds. So as an example, the governor made a big deal of the fact that he put $22 million into the rainy day fund. But what the public needs to hear is that we had to borrow $1.5 billion to do that. And the first payment on that $1.5 billion comes out next year. So next year's budget is going to be incredibly difficult to do in this process. So as you look at those kinds of issues, you want to be very much aware of those kinds of concerns. The second issue that had me tremendously concerned is a bill that I had sponsored last year, House Bill 453, which required that any auditor general audit finding had to be responded to within 120 days, was put into play. It was adopted very similar to my bonus depreciation bill. It was adopted into another bill, but all the language remained intact, which required these findings to be reported. The Auditor General in that 1 year identified $810 million of findings. And what I also wanted to see is that $810 million reflected in a reduction in the budgets of those departments that overspent or misspent, and that $810 million to go to pay down our pension liability, which is a huge number. It's still over $71 billion. You know, I mentioned to everyone that we ought to be really fortunate that the president was able to keep this economy going pretty strong, and we have record unemployment numbers in the Commonwealth and in the United States. But even so, the unemployment rate in Pennsylvania is about 0.8 of a percentage point higher than federally, which costs us $92 million a year lost revenue to the state. So what I want to see is long-term sustainable plans. I want to see a better accountability of these trust funds. I'm still not satisfied with the response we got from the executive branch relative to the sale of the farm show complex in Harrisburg. And so for those reasons, I said I'm a no vote. And we've got a number of budget bills into play. We've got a lean government bill of mine that's currently in the House of Representatives. We hope to get over to the Senate. And Senator Pat Brown and Senator Mensch indicated that they would sponsor a companion bill to make sure that we can get it done. I've got an Auditor General Enforcement and Fraud Act as well that's there. And when I see those types of financial controls put into play, something that I think will work out incredibly well for the long-term sustainability of the Commonwealth's finances, I'll vote yes for a budget. But I do want to emphasize this budget was probably the best I've seen. I think they did a great job of holding down any taxes, and I was very, very impressed that the taxpayer was not put on the hook for this. I just think that we should have been able to put more money with a better responsibility and response from the executive branch to have the government of Pennsylvania a lot more accountable to people for the dollars that we give them.
Let's talk for just a minute or so that we have remaining about the Auditor General and your efforts to make sure that when the Auditor General turns up a problem that something is done. Of course, our current Auditor General, Eugene D. Pasquale, I think has done a great job of pointing out numerous problems in state government. In your experience, is the legislature and the governor really taking action, though, on the problems that he does bring to light?
I'm seeing increasing attention being put onto it by the legislative branch. I can tell you that the appropriations chairs in the Senate, Senator Pat Brown, and in the House of Representatives, Representative Stan Saylor, are taking it very seriously. The mechanism is just now getting established from the bill that I sponsored a year ago. I have found that the Auditor General's finding and his auditors are superior. They have done a magnificent job, and they give a wealth of information. And so that will be one of the things that I intend to push forward on hard in this coming year. I'm a little bit disappointed in the executive branch that when we asked for information, I was sitting in some of the committee meetings for the appropriations for the budget. When we asked specific questions about, as an example, the farm show complex, other savings, those responses were not forthcoming as I would like to have seen. And I also found that some of the comments that were made relative to the special funds that were identified by the Common Sense Caucus, of which I'm one of the proud members, were not addressed in a way I think that they should have been addressed. So so that whatever dollars we do ask the taxpayers to provide us, that we're using effectively and efficiently.
We have been talking again with State Representative Frank Ryan of the 101st Legislative District. And Frank, if we have listeners who would like to learn more about the topics we've discussed today, where can they find you on the web?
The best place to find me is at www.RepFrankRyan.com. Again, www.RepFrankRyan.com. I'd love to hear from you. I'm also on Twitter at FrankRyanCPA. And I'm on Facebook at Frank Ryan, Pennsylvania State Legislator. We'd love to hear from you.
State Representative Frank Ryan. Frank, thank you for being with us.
Loman, thank you so much again.
Pennsylvania's prevailing wage law adds hundreds of millions of dollars each year to the cost of building roads, bridges, schools, and other public projects. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi discuss the impact of prevailing wage on this Allegheny Institute report. Eric?
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is my colleague Frank Gamrat. Frank, you recently wrote a policy brief that's available at our website at www.AlleghenyInstitute.org on Michigan repealing its prevailing wage law and recommending that Pennsylvania think about a similar action. Mm-hmm. Can you describe for our listeners first what prevailing wage is and how long it's been around in Pennsylvania?
What happens is on publicly funded construction projects, the prevailing wage is a wage rate that's set by the Department of Labor Industry at the state level for each individual county. So each individual county has a different wage rate for painters or carpenters or drywall hangers, etc. And so these rates then become the standard by which, if you're going to work on a publicly constructed project, has to be paid to whomever's on the job. And so it basically has been an artificially high wage set forth by the state of Pennsylvania, and it really has hindered, you know, the ability to get a lot of construction projects done. If you're in an area without a lot of union contractors, the non-union guys are really hamstrung to have to pay this thing, and it favors the unions, and it's definitely one of the regulations that we've been fighting for years to try to repeal to make Pennsylvania a little more competitive and to ease the burden on taxpayers.
How long has the law been around in Pennsylvania?
Well, a great question. In Pennsylvania, it's been around since 1961. At the federal level, it's called the Davis-Bacon Act, and that was done back in the 1920s in a way of protecting northern labor from cheap migrant labor coming up from the south. In Pennsylvania, so there was, it was done in 1961, and again, it was done to protect local labor from cheap migrant labor. But really, all it has done now is protecting union labor against local non-union labor, and it really tilts the playing field in favor of the union.
So it's basically more than five decades, and obviously mm-hmm. there's been a lot of publicly funded projects,
right,
a lot of infrastructure, a lot of transportation mm-hmm. networks, so on and so forth. So can you give our listeners an example of what this would mean, like on a project that was
right.
related to transportation? Because obviously we know, you know, we're paying money to have, you know, the roads fixed, the bridges, mm-hmm. highways. So it has to be a contract that's let out, and then somebody bids on it, wins,
right,
and then they say, okay, these are the wage rates you're going
right.
to pay. What does that mean then for the taxpayer in Pennsylvania?
Well, for the taxpayer, what that's saying is, let's say your local municipality wants to pave a road. If they want to pave a road, they have got to hire a firm that's going to pay the prevailing or the union wage. Now, this is, you know, backtrack a little bit, this is set forth in Pennsylvania law. The Department of Labor and Industry is directed to use wages from collective bargaining agreements. So it's written in the law that it doesn't have to be the union wage, but it's highly suggested that wages from collective bargaining agreements be used. So that's then where the bar is set. So back to the municipality. If they want to pave a road, they have to have the bid that covers the prevailing wage. So you will end up paying more for having that road done than you might otherwise if a non-union company were allowed to bid, and you're allowed to take the lowest bidder. So what that means for the average person is that their property taxes may have to go up, or their wage taxes, whatever their municipality collects to do road work, to pave fewer roads than they otherwise would be able to pay at even a lower rate. Now, municipalities have been fighting this thing for years, and there was a ruling about 10 years ago where the judges came out and said that repair work now is covered by prevailing wages. At one point in time, repair work was not. Milling of roads, I think, was the real question. And milling of road is now reconstruction. So municipalities are really under the gun here. Take PennDOT, for example. In 2017, PennDOT spent $2.57 billion on roads and bridge projects across the Commonwealth. Now, let's say you have savings of 10%. Now, that's sort of on the low side because a lot of studies have said anywhere from 10 to 25, even 35% savings from the prevailing wage rate if it were to be eliminated. Even at 10%, you're talking $257 million that PennDOT would have saved by allowing the lowest bid to go forward by letting non-union guys in there. And so think of how many roads and bridges $257 million would go. We would have better infrastructure at that price. And so then it brings the other question, why don't non-union laborers pay for this? And it goes back to two pieces. One, of course, is the prevailing wage rate, but it also specifies what we call the benefit rate. Unions typically have benefit packages that their members can partake from, and it's not a monetary issue. If you're a non-union workforce and you don't have such packages, you are required to pay your workers a supplemental wage to cover the benefits. So, and when you do that, you pay them the extra monetary in their wages. You also have to pay the payroll taxes and Social Security taxes and all those other taxes that go along with it. So, and then think of the bookkeeping. If I've got some people working on government work that have to be paid a prevailing wage, and I've got people working on identical projects on a non-union wage, look at the bookkeeping that would take. You know, how much more would I have to spend just to keep the books right? In a lot of cases, it just doesn't pay for a non-union company to even bid on a contract.
Frank, you had mentioned some of the expected savings that would come if based on estimates of percentage. With Michigan repealing its law, mm-hmm. and now there, I believe you mentioned, I think they're like the
24th state.
Well, so almost 50-50 here with states mm-hmm. with prevailing wage, states without. Is there a dollar figure estimate of how much they think they're going to save in their state mm-hmm. now that their law is repealed?
Right. The Mackinac Center, which is a sister think tank of ours up in Michigan, has estimated that the state of Michigan will save about $400 million a year without the prevailing wage law. Now think about that. We're in a state that's always struggling to make the budget work, always having issues, especially the last couple of years. You know, $400 million would certainly go a long way in helping the state with its budget, because it's not just road work, it's buildings, it's schoolhouses. Anything that's a government publicly funded contract is subject to the prevailing wage. You know, we talk about the economic development that the governments fund around here through TIF projects or subsidies. All of that then becomes a prevailing wage job, and things have to be paid according to the union wage. You would save a lot of money, and the dollar would stretch farther, or you wouldn't have to struggle so much with your budget.
Frank, interesting stuff as always, and we encourage our listeners, if they're interested in this topic and others, to always visit our website, look at our archives, look at our more recent work at www.alleghenyinstitute.org. You can also follow us on Twitter, where there's a link provided through our website. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
U.S. Senator Robert P. Casey Jr. was a no vote on confirming Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court, even before meeting and talking with the jurist. On this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary, Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, says the judge should be given a chance to make his case for confirmation.
The ink was hardly dry following President Donald Trump's nomination of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court when Senator Bob Casey announced his blanket opposition. It's disappointing that Senator Casey chose partisan politics over doing the right thing for Pennsylvanians. Had Senator Casey bothered to learn about Judge Kavanaugh, he would have found he is a jurist with sterling credentials, strong integrity, and an outstanding commitment to interpreting the law as written. As Judge Kavanaugh said after accepting the president's nomination, "My judicial philosophy is straightforward. A judge must be independent and must interpret the law, not make law. A judge must interpret statutes as written, and a judge must interpret the Constitution as written, informed by history and tradition and precedent." This philosophy is the mark of a good jurist and illustrates why Judge Kavanaugh is highly respected by leaders across the ideological spectrum. Among his supporters is George Mason University law professor Michael Krauss, who said that Judge Kavanaugh's opinions have, quote, reflected his core philosophy of faithfully applying the text and original meaning of the Constitution and laws. His devotion to the Constitution and to his oath of office has led him to constantly refuse to invent new rights or to legislate from the bench, unquote. At the other end of the political spectrum, Yale Law School professor Akhil Reed Amar has said, quote, it's hard to name anyone with judicial credentials as strong as those of Judge Kavanaugh, and has praised him as someone who commands wide and deep respect among scholars, lawyers, and jurists. This support from across the ideological spectrum helps explain why Judge Kavanaugh was confirmed to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit with bipartisan support. Senator Arlen Specter, the longtime U.S. senator from Pennsylvania, was among those who cast a vote in favor of Judge Kavanaugh. Since serving on the U.S. Court of Appeals, Judge Kavanaugh has presided over hundreds of cases on a variety of issues of importance to the American people. He's distinguished himself as a fair jurist, faithfully applying the Constitution and steering clear of legislating from the bench. As a result, the Supreme Court has endorsed positions laid out in Judge Kavanaugh's opinions 13 times. Judge Kavanaugh is the type of jurist the American people are looking for to serve on the high court. He's not unlike an umpire on the field, fairly calling balls and strikes and not looking to become star of the game. Finally, Judge Kavanaugh is a married father of two school-aged daughters and a regular lector at his church, the Shrine of the Most Blessed Sacrament. He also volunteers for Catholic charities and tutors at the Washington Jesuit Academy in his spare time. Despite all this, Senator Casey cannot bring himself to support the president's nominee. The senator's opposition will only make it more difficult for Americans to have the fully functioning judiciary we deserve. The people of Pennsylvania deserve a qualified jurist on the Supreme Court. It is unfortunate that Senator Casey has chosen partisan politics and didn't even give Judge Kavanaugh a chance before declaring his opposition. As the Pennsylvania State Director at Americans for Prosperity, I'm committed to mobilizing our grassroots volunteers to let people know that Judge Kavanaugh deserves to be expeditiously confirmed. I'm Beth Ann Mumford, State Director of Americans for Prosperity. Find us on the web at www.afp.com.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WMSS-FM in Middletown, WKVE-FM in Mount Pleasant, along with WPHB-AM in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.
We'll be right back.